I'm Gab. He's Don. Jewel's still on assignment. On assignment. That's right. On assignment up north. Blue skies over West London. Jewel's. Jewel's. No, there you go. You do such a good job filling in for Jewel's.
There you go.
No, I think we have quite the weekend because a lot happened. We saw Rodrigo, two goals for Real Madrid. Der Klassiker, Bayern imploding again.
Again.
Xabi Alonso's big decision. We're going to get to all of that. But we have to start in this three-way title race, the Etihad, Manchester City against Arsenal. Mm. It finished 0-0. I think I'll just give you my quick 30-second summation. I thought the first half, both teams were actually afraid to make mistakes and
dead.
Cancel each other out.
It was
dull. It wasn't even like, oh, look, tactical battle. No, it was just dull and not well executed. Second half, business picked up a little bit, not that much. In the end, for me, this is definitely 2 points dropped for Man City if they want to think in terms of the title race.
I agree.
Right? Captain obvious here.
Yep. I totally agree. I think your analysis is fair. I think the first 45 was a boring game. It was hard to watch. It was dull. The second half opened up. From a footballer's point of view and an Arsenal's point of view, they'd done a job on City. They were in low blocks. They just wanted City to go wide. They didn't allow them to get any spaces. De Bruyne didn't really get a kick. Foden didn't really get a kick. So when you're Arsenal, go to the Etihad and a really big game, to come away from there with a point, it's kept their momentum alive. It's kept them unbeaten. Gives them confidence going into the next game. They'll beat Luton. They'll beat them by 5 or 6 or 7.
Oh, stop with that.
But it puts a bit of pressure on Man City now, because the home team and the way they destroyed Arsenal last season, they should have been, or if they want to win the title, that's a game where I think we both agree they've dropped a couple of points.
I think we have to, or at least I want to, praise Mikel Arteta here.
Yep.
Not just because he played the lineup, which I think is the right setup. In other words, the one, at least for big games, in other words, the one with Georgie in midfield, mm-hmm. with Declan Rice,
yep.
Gabriel Jesus. I like Kai Havertz at center forward. If you want to have Jesus in the team because of his work rate, because of all the things he does, fantastic.
Yep.
But then put him out wide. Maybe sacrifice Martinelli, bring him on late when he's fresh.
Yep.
That plan almost worked if Trossard had hit a different pass.
Yep.
And I actually thought Pep didn't find the countermeasures to that.
I think he put his players on to try and do that, but Grealish was disappointing. Grealish is starting to become very predictable now. I'm watching Jack Grealish. Now, I don't know if it's a lack of confidence. He doesn't take players on. He's very predictable. He gets it on his right foot. He squares the right right back up, but he just keeps going back inside. I know why he does it. I spoke to Jacob Murphy at Newcastle about it, and he says the reason why they do that and they play Grealish on the left is you try to suck all the players over to that side for the big transition over to the other side. But then when he come on, didn't really do much. Doku was disappointed when he come on. As I said, Foden, Grealish didn't really get a kick. I thought Haaland was very poor. But I'd put that down to giving Arsenal a lot of credit on how they managed the spaces. Because last year, if you remember, he came up with this crazy plan, Arteta, of going man for man all over the pitch. And he left Rob Holding with Erling Haaland and he destroyed him. The tactics yesterday were spot on. Might not have been a great watch, but a professional performance.
Yeah, so you said the tactics were spot on. So we've praised Arteta.
Yeah.
Equally, Pep is Pep. Did he just say, okay, I know what Arteta's doing. Rather than fiddle with my team tactically, you know, I mean, I don't just mean like bringing on different wingers.
Yeah.
I am going to go and try to get my guys just to execute better.
Yeah.
And because ultimately, I'm not, you know, is there a moment when you just put your faith in the players and say, look, they've got the plan to stop you, Don.
Yeah.
But Don, you're better than he is.
Yes.
You just beat him.
Yeah, sometimes you can overanalyze the role that Pep played in the second half. Because sometimes when you've got a team like Arsenal who are so deep and have got or not allowing you any spaces whatsoever, you can't tactically tweak anything apart from getting the ball out wide a bit quicker and saying to your players, I need you to take players on. Doku, I need you to get to the byline. Jack, I need you to take players on. Pointless coming square because Arsenal were just shifting across the pitch.
Well, it felt that that was one thing that Grealish wasn't doing. He was, I don't know.
That's what I'm saying.
If the ball gets to him, everything stops to a crawl, and then I expect him, all right, you're either going to hit that diagonal ball that you talked about, or you're going to take somebody on and fall over.
But he's done neither, did he?
He's
done neither for quite a while. That's what I'm saying about him being predictable. He's lost that ability, or he's lost his confidence to take players on, or it's the manager's instructions
and
to keep hold of the ball.
And you have an issue with Erling Haaland's finishing here. We were talking off air.
I do, because I spoke to, I won't throw him under the bus, but I've spoke to Premier League strikers, great Premier League strikers, and they say, or he said, his finishing is very, very scruffy. My issue with Erling Haaland, and I haven't really got one because I can't have one because he's a genius banging in 50 goals every single season, but I think he would take criticism on board, not from me, but from other strikers of the past. And I think when you watch him, he's obsessed with taking everything on his left foot. The goal that he should have scored against Man United, remember he raised his left foot, crossbar height. You go into the Rolodex of finishes gap, it's a nodding goal.
It was,
the chance that he missed against Arsenal, it's a right foot finish. It's a tap-in finish. He's obsessed with his left foot because that's his strong foot.
He has said in the past he needs to improve his heading.
Yep.
He hasn't said, I need to improve my right foot, but clearly his left foot's a lot stronger.
Yeah.
That chance in particular, the one at the far post, where, like, he looks completely uncoordinated, right?
Yeah.
When the ball comes across. I thought this is actually maybe he switched off a little bit. He misjudged something. Mm. There's no way. He doesn't even hit it badly with his left foot.
He misses it. Misses the ball completely.
Right? That's something that happens to footballers in games.
Time to time.
Right. Beyond that, in terms of his performance, I thought Saliba and Gabriel both did a very, very good job on him.
Yeah, I agree. They were aggressive. But it comes back to the position, because if you're Saliba and you're Gabriel and Haaland's got you on the halfway line with wide players, and you mentioned Foden and Jack Grealish and Doku when he came on, it's difficult. But the centre-backs played on the edge of their own 18-yard box, so they were allowing no space in behind. So therefore, 99 times out of 100, Haaland's standing in front of you and there's nowhere for him to spin, because normally he spins off on his left side. So they played him really well. What I loved about Gabriel's performance, he was really aggressive verbally. Even after the game, they were having a little bit of push and a shove. I don't mind that. Then they sort of high-fived after Pep sort of calmed it all down. But it tells you that that's the way to play against Haaland. Be aggressive against him, put him off his game, tackle him, be strong.
Now, the issue, though, with playing deep, it didn't feel to me like Arsenal were playing super deep.
Well, they had 28% possession.
It felt like they didn't have a lot of the ball.
Territorially, they were very deep.
But
for a reason.
They didn't have a lot of the ball. But I also thought they also, when you have Havertz and Jesus, who I think off the ball work as well as any two forwards, if you want to consider Havertz a forward in the league, right?
And Saka.
And Saka on the other side, who maybe wasn't, didn't do as much as you would expect on the ball, but off the ball.
They sacrificed themselves, didn't they?
Yeah.
Which goes against the grain, which is hard to do because that's time on the training ground. So when you're a team like Arsenal and you play a certain way and you're front-footed and you're entertaining, to completely change the game plan for one game against City, that's hard work on the training ground. That's a manager putting in place with his technical staff. It could be shadow play. It could be any number of patterns of play when you haven't got the ball, because because all these flair players have sacrificed themselves for one game and got the point.
Right. I mean, they might sacrifice themselves again in certain games if necessary. I mean, it is a skill being able to play
but not to the certain extent they've done it against Man City, because next game they'll be on the front foot again.
Of course.
That's the way they play. So to do that, I mean, sacrifice himself in terms of the game plan to say, right, today we're going to be super defensive, we're going to play counter-attacking football. That's not really the Arsenal way. But to do it against City at the Etihad is very impressive, I think.
And to do it with two training sessions, because let's not forget, most of these players would have been back on Wednesday night, which means they would have had Thursday and Friday to train. Saturday, obviously, you're traveling, and it's just a walkthrough, right?
Yep.
That also, I think, speaks to the players understanding the moment and Arteta being able to get his game plan across in a concise way. Because, by the way, sitting deep, please correct me if I'm wrong here, it's not just like, okay, guys, everybody park in the six-yard box. No, there's more to it than that.
Of course there is, yeah.
Because if you sit too deep, we've seen, with the likes of Rodri and De Bruyne and others, City can beat you shots from further out.
See, Pep would love that game again, and he'd love to have this imaginary game where he plays it again and Arsenal go at Man City. That's what he really wants, because he knows his team would open them up.
Yeah.
We'll never know the answers. Arsenal might beat them, City might beat them. Chances are, if it's an open game, Man City win. So his tactics were perfect, Arteta.
But I'm wondering rather than looking for 10 billion cutbacks, which is essentially the City bread and butter, right?
Yeah.
And it's just so effective and almost impossible to defend. Would you have liked to see, we saw Kovacic shoot from distance, would you have liked to see more of that.
Creativity gap, I think. I think when you make substitutions and you bring wide players on like Doku and Grealish, their job is to take fullbacks on. Their job is to get in behind, because hardly any point in the game, Haaland got in behind. Any midfield players got in behind. So when Arsenal are so deep, the only way you can get in behind is in 1v1s. If you've got ability like Grealish and Doku, you have to take players on. Take them on, twist them up 1v1, get to the byline, stand some crosses for Haaland. De Bruyne, bang them in low across the six-yard box. They never got in those positions. Arsenal never allowed them to. So that's where I thought, which I'm not really a fan of, when you see Guardiola schooling Grealish on the pitch after the game. I don't think it's for show, because Pep's more of a, he's more intelligent than that. But I think he was saying to Grealish, listen, I bring you on for a reason. I bring you on not to be safe. I bring you on not to play a side yard ball. I bring you on to take players on. That's what he wanted from his wide players. They couldn't do it. They weren't good enough.
I wonder, I mean, you mentioned at the attacking end, you mentioned maybe Alvarez.
I thought he should have come on. I thought when Haaland got the head injury with about, what was it, 5-6 minutes to go, I think Pep had a word, get stripped, you're coming on. And it was one of them games where Alvarez, because we've seen him over the years or months score some decent goals from distance, he's got that in his locker where you ain't getting in behind, you need a moment of magic, no one's producing, why not give him five?
On the other hand, it is the final minutes of the game and you put a ball into the mixer, you would rather have the giant Norwegian.
Yeah, but I was thinking from distance.
No, I get that, from distance, right? But from Haaland. You take off Haaland from 4 or 5 with. I mean,
but you can smell. But you can smell it though, Gab. If you're watching the game and you're thinking Haaland's getting no joy off Gabriel, he's getting no joy off Saliba.
Yeah, but there's only a few minutes to go.
I know. Right? So try something different. No, I would.
I don't know. I wouldn't have taken off Haaland there. I want to take it back to him though. You mentioned about the scruffy goals, right? And the clean finishing and whatever else. We've seen some. You know, historically, there's some strikers who have extremely clean technique. Right? Yeah. I mean, Lewandowski.
Yeah. Kane.
Leicester with his head. Kane, another one. Others who also score a ton of goals. I mean, Luis Suarez is one example, whose technique is anything but clean, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not saying he's
I know what you mean.
If you have the shot volume, because you get yourself into so many positions all the time.
Yeah.
If your technique isn't as clean, if maybe you finish 1 in 3 rather than 1 in 2.
Yeah.
It still adds up the same way, right?
Yeah, my only problem with Erling Haaland, and I shouldn't have one, but I have because I watched the game, I studied the game, I love the game, and I've got an opinion on the game, is when I see Erling Haaland, it's all left foot. Doesn't score many with his right foot. And there was a chance against Man United where it got flipped over towards the far post. He went for a left foot volley at about 10 feet in the air. If you go into the simplest finish
you
can
have. He got up pretty high.
Yeah, but he missed it. But if you go for the simplest finish, if you go into a Rolodex of finishing very quickly, right. You go nod it in head, chest it in head.
Right.
The one against Arsenal yesterday, it comes across the far post. He's trying to sort his feet because he's desperate to get it on his left. It's the right foot tapping. So he can improve on his right side, but I think it's a decision making because he's so obsessed with left foot finishes. You've got to back yourself to score that on your right foot or score with a diving header.
But I think
can't everything be on your left?
This is where we remind ourselves that we're still talking about a very, very young, a young player, especially as far as center forwards are concerned. Especially those big physical center forwards, generally, they take a few years, right? Harry Kane, we had Ben Davies on our podcast recently, and he said even when he was, when Harry Kane was young and, you know, he was on loan everywhere, he was playing last 5 minutes, you could see he was a tremendous finisher.
Yeah.
Maybe there were other aspects of his game he needed to improve, or maybe he just had a bunch of managers who were like, what, Harry Kane?
He can't
be good. And it took a while for somebody to come along like Pochettino to figure that out. But I guess what I'm getting at is, especially for that type of center forward, there can be a different development curve. And if Haaland gets better in the air, if he gets those things, I mean, he's going from somebody who scored 50 goals a season to sky's the limit.
Yeah. But right? it's a slight criticism, but it's not a worry because you know the type of player he is. He's got the attitude and the charisma to brush anything off. I remember him saying a couple of months back when he was in not great form, he was coming back from an injury, he looked very rusty, and he had a couple of efforts and they were way off. And you go, yeah, but we've been there. Like, it's his first game back, give him time. All of a sudden, he bags 5 against Luton.
Right.
That's what he does because he gets the volume of chances and he's a good finisher. I'm not criticising him for bad technique. I think it's more the bad decision making. And he can get better. And like you said, if he does get better, what's he going to hit? 50, 60?
Well, he doesn't need me to defend him. But I will say, though, in this game, the focus on Haaland, because of the chance he missed, or two chances, really, that he missed, he did tie up both center backs.
Yeah.
And that should, in theory, create more opportunities, whether it's De Bruyne running through the middle, Bernardo Silva, you know, starting in a wide area, coming inside. Like, and I thought those guys were missing too. And I just wonder if maybe the focus on Haaland, that is something that City could have exploited better. And these other guys are quiet games, and we don't talk about it. We talk about Grealish because we saw him.
Well, I think Bernardo Silva made a great point after the game, and he went, it's our obligation, it's our duty to get Erling Haaland chances, and we didn't do that today. And I thought that was brilliant from a midfield player saying that, because it's true, Gab. When you play in midfield, you've got to do everything in midfield, right? But your one of your main jobs is to supply your centre-forward with chances. Man City didn't do that. They couldn't. Arsenal stopped them. So Foden never really got any one-twos going or balls down the side for Haaland. Grealish didn't do it. Doku didn't do it. De Bruyne didn't do it. So they were a little bit guilty of not supplying Haaland with enough chances. They supplied him a one shot or two shots, if you include the fresh air one. But I think they had one shot on target.
You know, I guess what I'm driving at, though, in a game like this, when
Haaland's so it's not all on him.
Isn't on, he's still doing so much, stretching the two centre backs so much, forcing Declan Rice to play deeper.
Oh, yeah, I get all that, but
this is when I expect, all right, you are their midfielders, who we know you can score a lot of goals because you have scored a lot of goals.
I get all that, but we're going to focus on the chance that you missed, aren't we?
Yeah, no.
We get everything else, what he does for the team.
More broadly, with the fact that City obviously won a treble last year, do we get our expectations maybe a little bit higher than what they should be, in the sense that it is actually very, very difficult to repeat?
I think.
I mean, is this City team worse than last year? I'll just throw that out there.
I think it's worse because I think they've let a really underrated player go in Gundogan, who I've Pep's first signing. I've always watched players with a really high football IQ. He's the one, I think, over the years that stood out to me, who can play any position. He scores in big games. He'll play as a false nine. He'll play as an eight. He'll play off the right, play off the left, play as a 10. Always affects big games. They've lost his intelligence. They've lost his craft. They've lost the creativity there. So Kovacic and Rodri, two completely different types of players. You've still got Foden, still got De Bruyne. I get that. But whenever Gundogan played in the very biggest of games, I always thought he affected it.
I mean, they're starting from such a high level.
They're off the double treble.
Yeah, exactly. But when you look at it, obviously, again, Ederson wasn't there.
Walker was a miss.
Walker was definitely a miss in this game. But I'm just talking about sort of this season compared to last season. Look, overall, who's been performing on the same level? I think the back line in general hasn't been on the same level. I mean, not that Ruben Dias and Akanji and Ake have been poor, but I think certainly Ruben Dias, I don't think, is the player he was last year for whatever reason. Gundogan is missing. Kovacic or Mateus Nunez, whoever plays in there, isn't going to give you what Gundogan can do.
Yeah.
I think Rodri's still exceptional, but I think this team's more Rodri dependent.
Yeah.
Maybe because Gundogan isn't there than they were before. De Bruyne, you know, Foden, I think, is better maybe than he was last year. Again, looking at his body of work over the season as a whole.
And De Bruyne is now 32.
De Bruyne is a year older. Grealish isn't on the level he was at last year.
Doku's raw. Doku's new and raw.
Doku's pretty darn good. I just think it's very, very difficult. I don't want to sound like Pep, but like when you put the bar so high, it's extremely difficult, but especially when you've got some pieces changing.
Definitely. Right? But we trust in Pep, don't we? That's probably why we look at Man City and look at Pep the
genius. That's why they're held to the highest standard.
Absolutely.
All right. This is where we play the percentages game.
Go on then.
So, as it stands.
Yeah.
Liverpool have a 2-point lead over Arsenal and a 3-point lead over Manchester City.
Yeah. We've got a better goal difference by 5 over City.
I don't believe in goal difference, but it is. Well, no, I don't.
Why not?
Because it's not a thing. I mean, I know it decides the title, so it is a thing. Yeah. But it shouldn't, in my view. In my view, teams finish level in points or something at stake. You should have a 1-game playoff. I think it's the only fair way determine it, but whatever.
I like that, to be fair.
So where do you... Where do you put the percentages? We were talking off air before.
About the supercomputer.
Okay, all right. Here's pure marketing, right?
Rubbish.
Okay, some PR nerd says, let's get some free thing. I get these emails on my phone all the time, right? and there's some PR people saying, hey, don't you want to talk about this? But it is a talking point. The supercomputer
has given Arsenal a 1 in 5 chance of winning the league.
I think they had Arsenal about 18%. They had
which City is about 1 in 5.
35%, in my book. About 1 in 3, right?
Yeah.
1 in 5, 1 in 3. Liverpool were close to 50%, so yeah. Close to 1 in 2.
Yeah.
Is that right?
No.
No.
How can
right,
you,
give
how
me
can,
your percentage.
Well, how can you give ball? Arsenal a 1 in 5 chance of winning the league?
Well, why not?
If well, they're sitting in second. They're playing well. They're winning games.
Right, but if you think, because there's no more head-to-heads left, right?
Yeah.
So if you think City are a better team than Arsenal, which I think you and I think,
yeah.
If you think Liverpool are equal to Arsenal,
they'll win every
better,
home game, Liverpool, because of the Klopp factor.
Are Liverpool better than Arsenal? Or are they equal?
I think they are just better.
Okay. So, sorry, Don. If you think City are better than Arsenal, then it follows that you must think
you
that City must be able to make up one point on
but
Arsenal.
But you can be just better than someone. You don't have to be by a country mile better than someone. I mean, City at this point
are. You think City are just better than Arsenal?
Yeah.
Okay. And Liverpool are just better
than Arsenal?
Right.
City, Arsenal. I'm not sure.
So if Liverpool are just better than Arsenal and Liverpool have a 2-point lead, what's wrong with giving them, like the supercomputer did, a 47% chance?
Oh, no. I'm not saying on Liverpool's point of view.
Okay, so Liverpool's fine.
I've got Liverpool on 50%.
Okay, perfect.
Because of a 2-point lead, because of the Klopp factor at Anfield, they'll win every single game there. They won't lose any games at Anfield.
Right.
They've got easier games in the running. Arsenal are a couple of points behind, but they've got really, really difficult away games, fixtures. Yeah. And City are Man City, who can string with 9 games to go. They can win 8 out of 9.
Okay, so what would you give City?
I would give City 30 and Arsenal 20.
So, sorry, didn't you say a minute ago that you were angry because the computer because it gave?
Because the computer's just, we're
the
all
computer,
guessing.
The computer and Don Hutchinson come up with the same result, and yet the
rubbish.
Computer's wrong. Oh my goodness, Don. Yeah, no. The one thing I would add is when we look at who's got the easier run in, who's got the tougher run in, we often forget this. And you're a player. You've been there, done that. Not everybody has to be Gary O'Neill who gets booked so they're late in the season so we can go and watch the Masters, right? Like you did when he was at Middlesbrough. But there are some teams that, oh look, we thought we were going to get relegated. Now we're safe. Or we were relegated a long time ago. Now
let's
we don't
free.
Really give a crap, right?
Yeah, let's play free. Or there's a team that wants to win so bad. They'll do anything to win, and sometimes they do.
But I'm saying is when we look at these games late in the season, and it's tough to predict, obviously, because you know teams might get relegated or teams might stay up a couple of games before. The teams I don't want to face late in the season are teams who are likely who are fighting to avoid. I don't want to play Everton. I don't want to play Forest.
I do. City. Okay. Do.
Everton
do.
Are on the slide. Fine. I'd rather.
No, I didn't mean Everton. I mean you want to play them teams down there because there's a higher percentage chance you're going to beat them. Like if you go.
I think they're going to be more motivated. I think they're going to be a lot more motivated.
Yeah, but they're not
than some team who's 10th or 11th.
But they're in the bottom five for a reason because they're rubbish.
Yeah, you know what? There's teams that are 10th, 11th, 12th who are also rubbish in the Premier League. And
but if you look at the next round of fixtures,
okay. Wolves have won their season, right? Wolves are staying up. Wolves have been phenomenal.
Loads
right?
of injuries. Huang's injured.
That's fine.
Neto's injured.
Right. But I want to play Wolves because Wolves aren't going down. Wolves have had a successful season.
I want to play Sheffield United and Burnley.
Because they'll probably already be down. I don't know.
No, I think when you look at the next round of fixtures up the top of my head, I think Arsenal have got Luton.
I'm not saying the next round, but I'm saying going forward. Like I don't think playing Luton is fun.
But going forward, Arsenal have got Luton. They'll beat them. Liverpool have got Sheffield United. They've beat them. Man City have got Villa. Tough game.
Well, yeah, obviously, Villa have something to play for.
Yeah, but that's my point.
All right, you heard it from the man. Percentages. The computer says roughly Liverpool 50, City 30, and Arsenal 20. And that's rubbish.
Rubbish.
Don Hutchinson says Liverpool 50, City 30, Arsenal 20. Exactly. And that makes a lot of sense. All right, enough City. How about some quick hits instead?
Let's do it.
Liverpool beat Brighton 2-1, and as we said, the lead is up to 2 points, Don. Mohamed Salah looked a little bit rusty, shall we say? A
little bit.
By his standards, but Alexis McAllister was pretty special.
Oh my, 35 million, what a signing. What a signing. I mean, he's played as a six, he's now back in the eight position because of Endo. I thought Gerald Kwanzaa at the back was amazing, he looks like a baby Van Dijk. I thought Liverpool were really good against a good Brighton side. But Mohamed Salah, you're right in looking a little bit rusty in terms of his finishing. But I seen him against Man United. He was almost protecting that hamstring a little bit. I seen him running the length of the pitch time after time. So that tells me what a player to have in the running.
Right. I have really no good problem if people who've historically scored a lot of goals screw the pooch a couple times in, with their finishing. It happens. By the way, I said it all season. McAllister at six. He's fine.
Do it.
But this is where he does the damage.
Oh, my. I mean, I knew he was good, Gab, but I didn't realise he was this good. Talking of good, talking of bad, Bayern Munich, meanwhile, are beaten at home by Dortmund 2-0. If they hadn't conceded the title yet, surely this seals it.
Yeah, I think psychologically, mentally, they'd won three games on the spin. They scored 8 goals against Muppet teams. And then, look,
why have they not sacked Tuchel? They should have sacked him after the Freiburg game when he's laughing and joking with some of the Freiburg staff.
I mean, they have essentially sacked him. He's a zombie coach through the end of the season.
Sack him properly.
I think he should have gone to a caretaker.
Same.
I think they still got it in his head that because Tuchel won the Champions League, until we get knocked out from the Champions League, he's going to stick around. I thought this was really, really disappointing. Musiala had a rough game, but also he can't be your only creative force. Harry Kane missed a couple headers, actually.
From a player's point of view, are you going to be really playing for this manager that you know is not going to be there?
No, he's not going to be there. You know that gone. Your bosses think he's not good enough.
Yeah.
And have sacked him. That's a tough point. And I think it's on the players. But on Borussia Dortmund, I thought they sat deep. They countered. They did really well. Nicholas Füllkrug, Füllkrug Brandt to Adeyemi for the first goal, bit special. And my man Ian Mattsson again. Oh. What a player. So as we mentioned Liverpool and Bayern, let's talk Xabi Alonso. What do you make of him announcing that he will stay at Bayer Leverkusen for one more season? Obviously, I think it's an open secret. Liverpool and Bayern have job offers, job openings, two of his previous clubs.
Mm-hmm. Stinks of Real Madrid to me.
Oh my God! No.
Why?
Why?
Why don't you like that?
Okay, so
don't you think he's staying at Leverkusen for one more year out of a little bit of loyalty, which I quite like?
Uh-huh.
But don't you think he's got an eye on potential Real Madrid?
He can have eyes wherever he wants. I mean, first of all, he has 9 Real Madrid. He has 9 Liverpool. He has a lion.
But Liverpool job and Bayern job won't be there in a year's time. You wouldn't have thought.
Right? Will the Real Madrid job be there in a year's
time?
Maybe not. Well, what if Liverpool appoint Alan Pardew and it all goes? I wrote a whole column about this. I think this is a sign of humility, and it's a sign of not just loyalty, but humility. He knows he's had, this is his first full season as a manager.
Yeah.
He knows he's got a ton to learn. He knows he's got a lot to grow. People are saying, oh, he already has a deal with Real Madrid through 2025.
Oh, I don't think there's a deal there.
Carlo Ancelotti has a deal through 2026, by the way, right? So we'd have to wait 2 years, right? Unless they sack
Ancelotti.
What's
happened to the Brazil job then? Is that far gone? I thought that was nearly done.
No. He said he was going to stay if Real Madrid offered him a job, and Real Madrid offered him a job. Xabi Alonso, who knows what happened? Bayer Leverkusen have the fourth highest wage bill in the Bundesliga, right?
Mm.
They could finish third next season. Maybe you go out in the round of 16 of the Champions League, and then look, that Real Madrid job no longer there, right?
No, I get it.
I love the fact that he knows he needs to learn and grow to be ready to manage a club like Liverpool or Bayern or Real Madrid. And I think people should, I mean, all conspiratorial and stupid about it, people should just, I think, just go and recognize that. Yeah. There is. Managers do develop loyalty towards players, right?
Yes.
Sometimes,
yeah.
There is such a thing.
He's on pace for a record-setting season. Absolutely, I admire him for staying at Leverkusen. I really, really do. I think it's a great move from him. More Alonso, a late winner from Patrick Schick gives them a 2-1 win over Hoffenheim. Could they win this by mid-April?
Yeah, I mean, they could win this, I think, in 2 weeks' time if Bayern drop more points. They have a 13-point lead with 7 games to go.
That's finished.
They haven't lost a game all season, Dom. What do you want me to say? They have not lost a game all season.
I've seen them twice against Karabag, Leverkusen.
And they were rubbish.
No. They were 2-0 down, I think, with 5 minutes ago.
Yeah,
drew 2-2. The next game they played, 2-0 down, 1-3.
Yeah, but in this game, they weren't lucky. The winner may have come late. And by the way, shout out to Patrick Schick, because he's not the starting center forward. As you know, Victor Boniface has been out forever.
My point was they dominated. Yeah, my point was they're getting the job done. They've got belief, haven't they?
They create so many chances.
Yeah.
And it's just a tremendous job. Wild stuff at Brentford. United get battered. Mason Mount gives them the lead in injury time. And Christopher Odger equalizes in minute 99.
Trust the process, according to Ten Hag. What process?
This is terrible.
It's awful. I mean, I knew when they beat Liverpool last week in the Cup, I thought they'd get beat at Brentford. I knew they'd get beaten up because I watch a Man United side who are not even up for the fight. You know, managers used to tell us back in the day, be prepared for the fight, earn the right to play. I think Man United half think they can just rock up anywhere, not in an arrogant way, because it's just not good enough. They just think they can rock up and just play football. You can't when you play Brentford.
I mean, credit Thomas Frank, the way he set up, totally outfoxed.
Should have been 6-1.
But yeah, Brentford hit the woodwork four times. The number of touches in the box, Brentford had 85 touches in the box.
85.
Manchester United had 16. Ivan Toney, who I'm not his biggest fan, but I thought he was phenomenal, he had 15 touches on his own in the United box.
But when you watch them, you keep going round in circles. You think, it's the attitude, it's the application. No, they're just not good enough. Is the manager good enough?
One step forward, one step back.
Yeah, exactly. Rodrigo scores both goals as Real Madrid beat Atletico Bilbao 2-0, Gab. But with Vinicius absent, he looked really good down that left-hand side.
Look, Atletico Bilbao, thinking of the cup final, whatever. But I thought this was a comfortable win for Real Madrid. And I loved Rodrigo's performance. He's a guy who should be playing on the left-hand side. Unfortunately for him, Vinicius is there. Unfortunately for both of them, Kylian Mbappe, who likes playing on the left, could be on his way as well, although I think they'll find Mbappe elsewhere. But it's just a reminder of how good he can be when he's allowed to play on the left.
Do you think he stays there when Mbappe rocks up, or do you think...
And then Endrick as well. And Brian Diaz also had a tremendous game.
By the way, what a body on him, Endrick.
I know. He looks a player.
Body,
huh?
Envy.
Oh, yeah. If we could only be 16 again. And shout out, by the way, to Eder Militao, who came on late in the game. Great to see him back after his long injury. A late Adam Marasic goal gives Lazio a 1-0 win over Juventus in Igor Tudor's debut. Don, one win in their last nine for Max Allegri. Even Wojciech Szczesny has come out and says, this is embarrassing.
Yeah, I think he's been under pressure, Max Allegri, for quite a while now.
Would you cut him loose? This is a simple question.
If you can afford to, yeah.
But you can't.
That's the problem.
Yeah, but you know what? You can't afford to either. It's continuing with his nonsense. Continuing being rubbish.
So the answer to your question is, I would cut him loose. Yeah.
They fired Pirlo after a year, right?
De Zerbi might be the answer. De Zerbi will go back to Italy.
You can't afford De Zerbi, but I don't care. You got the
young
players. De
Zerbi's not going to be on
Allegri
money.
Rebuild. No, I know, but he's going to want a lot of money. And you still have to pay Allegri his money, right? So you have to go with somebody cheaper. But this is just horrendous.
Sarri?
Yeah, exactly.
PSG go down to 10 men for more than an hour as Beraldo gets sent off, but they still win 2-0 away to Marseille. Gab, does it seem like PSG are enjoying this? I keep seeing Kylian Mbappe being dragged off all the time. And he was booed off, he was taken off.
Yeah, he was. Of course he's going to be booed in Marseille. I don't think he enjoyed getting substituted when he did.
I mean, his face was thunder.
Yeah, he's not a happy bunny, but it's fine. Luis Enrique stamping his authority. I thought Paris Saint-Germain played well. I think Marseille are really limited when you are playing against 10 men. That's the reality of it. Gonzalo Ramos, I did not like the fact that he seemed to wind up the crowd after he scored the second goal, but there you are. They're going to win the title. Luis Enrique is already planning for the future, as he should be.
Mm.
Tottenham come from behind to beat Luton Town 2-1 as the race for top four continues. Don, did they look a little better than in recent outings where they were very up and down?
No, weird. It's not a criticism watching Tottenham under Postecoglou. I like it. They're entertaining. Fans are loving it. They pay their money. They're getting entertained. My biggest worry, and I commentated on this game, was a lack of game management either from the manager or when he brought Højbjerg on, brought Bentancur on the pitch. And with 5 minutes to go, they weren't exactly hanging on, Tottenham, but they were comfortable in the game. And a doggy went, Porro went, Bentancur went.
That's how he plays. That's Ange ball. They're brave.
But it's 2-1 against Luton, Gab.
You can score.
Højbjerg's come on. Højbjerg should be saying to Porro, don't move. A doggy, don't move. It's 2-1.
It's Udogi, by the way.
Okay, Udogi. But saying to Bentancur, who's off playing a number 10 for 5 minutes of the game. Sit in your slots. We need to win this game. Better teams would have got
ben
that
Davies
back.
Davies told us he's allowed to go as long as somebody else comes
better
back.
Better teams would have got that back to 2-2. Then you're talking about a draw.
If Timo Werner doesn't finish like
I
Timo
know.
Werner.
I mean, they had loads of chances, to be fair. A couple off the line that nearly went over the line. So there should have been a bigger scoreline, but it was a lack of game management that troubled me. Rafinha scores the only goal as Barca overcome 10-man Las Palmas to stay 8 points back in second, Gab. You always say they can do more.
I think Rafinha can do more, but equally he needs to be trusted. And, you know, this season he's been played on the right, he's been played on the left, he's been played here, he's been played there. He's not super consistent, but he's really, really talented. I was thinking about this. The guy who set up his goal, João Félix, tremendous pass. Those are two guys where I think you have to make a really, really big call, because if they're not going to be starters next year, and, you know, if Lamine Yamal continues to progress on one side, Gavi's going to be back on the other, maybe they shouldn't be starters. I think I'm not sure I would renew João Félix's loan. And as for Rafinha, he is actually somebody for which you can get a fee. He's 27 years old. He's a Brazilian international. If you have to sacrifice somebody, maybe that's where you
go. See, I've always thought with João Félix, correct me if I'm wrong, I've always thought if Pep could just get a hold of him, what a player he could turn him into.
Yeah, maybe. They have to work on his head.
Well, there you go.
Mauricio Pochettino is furious as Chelsea play more than an hour against Tanman Burnley, who are second in the table, second bottom in the table, I should say, and end up getting held at home 2-2. Don, this came 24 hours after Poch had said that based on analytics, Chelsea should be top four.
Well, I mean, what a statement. He forgot about goals scored. He forgot about chances created. He's somehow come up with his data in analysis. He should be top four. Based on what?
Based on expected goal difference.
Rubbish. Okay, score the goals.
Most other metrics, they're nowhere near top four. I just want to point that out.
You're setting yourself up for a fall. Once you start claiming your team should be in the top four, when you're drawing 2-2 against a 10-man Burnley, you're setting yourself up for a bit of criticism.
I was there. They were terrible. Really, really poor. Late in the game. But he doesn't help with the substitutions he brings on Sterling. Late in the game, everything consists of Burnley sitting deep and Enzo Fernandez somehow trying to quarterback and pick out a killer pass every time.
I don't see this lasting. No, Pochettino at Chelsea.
Burnley could have won if Jay Rodriguez had finished.
Yeah, I don't see it lasting. Rafa Leao, Gab, one of my favourite players, sets up another for Milan in their win against Fiorentina to strengthen their grip on second. What a player. Sometimes he's unplayable, isn't he?
Yeah, I think it helps when you play Fiorentina, who are wide open and will take you on. He was absolutely phenomenal, as you said. He scored one. He set up another one. Christian Pulisic also, I thought, did well after coming on. Milan are legit second place. I don't think there's much you can point at this season. I think any people who want Stefano Pioli out, I think, are out of their minds, frankly.
I think he's done some job, isn't he?
Aston Villa beat Wolves 2-0 as Moussa Diaby scores a screamer. Don, your thoughts?
I love this battle for fourth between them and Tottenham. I couldn't call it either way. I love watching Unai Emery. Side note, if I was Man United, I'd be all in for Unai Emery. I would, and Monchi. I love the way they play. I love watching them work. It was a routine win. To be fair to Wolves, they've got loads of injuries. Neto's injured. Huang's injured. I think Wolves and Gary O'Neill have done a great job, but this was... it was one step too far for them against their local rivals. Villa are impressing me. The loss against Tottenham when they got battered 4 a couple of weeks back wasn't a true reflection of the game, but I love watching Villa play. And I can't call who's going to get the fourth spot.
Unai Emery for Man United. Wow.
All in for him. I'd be all in for him.
See,
I love watching him work.
My concern with Unai Emery is the communication side of it. And I don't just mean his accent and good evening and whatever, because he talks like that in public. In Spanish as well.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a native language thing. I just think you have to have a bit of an image to be the United manager.
Do you? Ten Hag hasn't got one.
Ten Hag certainly developed one, dropping Cristiano or whatever. Unless you've got a strong director of football, which United, of course, don't have yet.
Mm-hmm.
If they get one, maybe it's different. I don't know. Jules and I disagree on this.
I love watching Unai Emery. I think he's an amazing manager. Christian Stuani comes on and scores the winner for Girona against Betis. Is that a feel-good story?
It is. The man's 37 years old. He scored 8 goals this season, mostly off the bench. Girona, I thought, should have battered Betis or free-falling. Dovbik scoring 2 goals. David Lopez made a mistake, which allowed Betis back into it. But then in injury time, and what makes this a wonderful story is 5 years ago, Girona were relegated from La Liga. Suani was 32 at the time. He scored 19 Liga goals that season, right? Yeah. So he had offers. Yeah. People were like, oh, look, dude, you're old.
Yeah.
You scored 19 top flight goals. He had offers from the Premier League. He had offers from the Bundesliga. He had offers from Serie A. And he had other offers in La Liga. What did he do? He says, no. I'm going to go down with Girona, and I'm going to help them come back up. Took them a while, helped them back up. Now he's 37. He's a part-time striker, but still goals to minute ratio still very good. And I love the fact I want to see him in the Premier in the Champions League next year.
Amazing,
with Girona. It's phenomenal. I mean, the Girona story is of course less of a fairy tale than as we know, right? For obvious reasons. But Stuani, wonderful story. I'm not going to ask who you were supporting on Saturday when Newcastle faced West Ham, your former club, because I think I know. But Don, this was quite the comeback.
This was some comeback. This was pure emotion at St James's Park. And the face of David Moyes at the end of the game was just a picture, because the West Ham fans up in the gods at St James's were olaying at one point when they were winning 3-1. They were cruising. West Ham at times battered Newcastle, and it was one of them stories where you're watching another player, Sven Botman, in the game before, he's done his ACL, then Jamal Lascelles done his ACL in this game. Almiron came off the bench, lasted 5 minutes, he'd done his knee at 3-1. You think, I mean, how many more things can go wrong in a single season or in a single game? And then all of a sudden, Harvey Barnes comes off the bench, gets a couple of goals at the Gallagher end, win 4-3. I mean, one of the games that you look back on in years to come, when you look at all the 4-3s and the 5-4s and the 4-4s, and you'll go, this was one of them games where it was an absolute classic.
The Isak penalty, maybe a little jammy?
I thought, maybe bias head, I thought both were penalties. I thought Gordon was really clever getting his foot in. I mean, the Calvin Phillips one, he's really unlucky, Calvin Phillips, because he doesn't see him. But I think the one on Sofal was a bit naive, should have stayed on his feet, should have saw him coming in, or in peripheral vision, try and check who's running in, because he got the two pens in more or less similar fashion. But a great game.
I saw you on Twitter taking issue with those West Ham fans who are not fans of Davy Moyes.
I know.
Jules, not a Davy Moyes guy.
Well, I'm not the oracle. I can just give my opinion. And I stated on Twitter saying, if David Moyes gets West Ham into European football for 4 years on the spin, he'll go down as one of the most successful managers of all time. Some West Ham fans, unknown reasons, apart from maybe taking some attacking players off in the game and allowing Newcastle back into the game, I get it from a sub's point of view, but the wider picture, body of work, I think he's done an amazing job to take West Ham away from the bottom three when Pellegrini took over for the sexy football, because you try and get someone in who's different and you don't appreciate the job that David Moyes has done. Everton fans will have him back in a heartbeat.
I think Ndali's done a great job. I think it touches a slight nerve with West Ham fans.
It does.
Because,
no, it
of course,
does.
West Ham won the World Cup, because they only had, like four managers until 1990, because among them are people like John Lyle and Bonds and whatever.
I don't think he can get them back. That's the worry. That's the problem for David Moyes. I don't think he can get them fans who are offside back onto his side. I think that's where he's struggling, which I think is ludicrous. Wild stuff between Stuttgart and Heidenheim, Gab, as Guirassy scores again.
Yes, he's got 23 goals in 21 games this season.
Flying.
If it hadn't been for his injury and, of course, the Cup of Nations, who knows where he would have been. Dennis Undav got the deserved, I thought, injury time equalizer, which is really important. Now, I think they're going to have some regret, because had they won this game, they would have just been just 1 point away from Bayern in second place. But they're having a tremendous season. What a story Stuttgart are. Even when things go against them, they have the resilience to keep coming back. You know, like, I'm not Derek Ray. I'm not going to tell you, yeah, the Bundesliga is so fantastic. But stories like this, environments like this is what it's all about, right? Let's go back to Newcastle. It's been a horrific season in terms of injuries, and now two more center backs, Sven Botman and Jamal Lascelles, have gone down. Does this give Eddie Howe a pass in terms of keeping his job?
A pass? Is it even under pressure? I don't see it. I would not swap Eddie Howe for Jose Mourinho any day of the week.
Okay, this is specifically just
Mourinho. No, because he's been linked with the job.
You can have your pick of managers.
He's been linked with the job, and I think he's sniffing for the job, because he'll say, I can get you a trophy. I don't see it. I think the job that Eddie Howe's done, and we can go back to when he first took over, steering Newcastle away from relegation into the top half the table, then getting them Champions League football. They've had a lot of emotional games this season. Fans that were at St James's Park for the PSG game says, I've heard them say that they'll never, ever forget that night. They were robbed in Paris with a ridiculous penalty, put too much pressure on the Milan game to try and save it, to try and salvage it. Then you go to Carabao Cups and they beat Man City. Oh, let's get an easy draw. No, Man United. Beat them, let's get an easy draw. Oh, no, Chelsea. Lose on penalties. FA Cup game was just out of their reach. Eddie Howe at times had 11 players to pick from, otherwise a bunch of kids. Got to take the whole thing in the context, in the situation. I think he's done an unbelievable job.
So, for you, it's open and shut.
Absolutely. He stays. And 99.9% of Newcastle fans, they want Eddie Howe to stay.
Eddie Howe and Jason Tindall are that popular.
They are, because the job that he's done.
Who's fomenting these rumours about, like, oh, but they went back to 10th and whatever?
Well, because people chat and people say, oh, they've gone backwards from last season. Well, last
so
season,
it's non-Newcastle. Like, no Newcastle fans having this debate.
Everybody thinks Eddie Howe's the right guy. Might be one in 100. But the job that he's done, exciting football. It's what Newcastle fans want. They don't demand trophies. They want to pay their money. They want to work hard. They want to go and watch their team and get entertained. Mm. And they're getting it. Sergio Ramos, another golden oldie. Scores the only goal of Sevilla, win away to Getafe, Gab. The result probably means they'll be safe from relegation, but what do you make of the racism allegations levelled at Getafe?
So I think this is where you have to make a decision, or even what you're going to call this stuff. People use the term discriminatory language. There's two incidents here, right? And I think they are a little bit different. One is Kike Sanchez Flores, who is of Roma, or some use the word traveler heritage, very proud, very open about it. And our former Getafe manager as well, you know, he was abused for that. There's a long history of the Roma people being discriminated against. It's entirely unacceptable. You know, he said, I'm proud of what I am, blah, blah, blah. Is this the same as racism? I think it's fair enough to include this in the same way, you know, we treat anti-Semitism, we treat homophobia, we're taking steps against these things. Acuña's situation is a little bit different. So Marcos Acuña, who of course is you might remember from the World Cup.
Yeah.
He was called a monkey over and over again. The referee stopped the game because of that. Marcos Acuña, I don't know exactly what his heritage is. I don't want to put words in his mouth, but I think it's fair to say most people, this is a situation, if you remember Martin Keown, who used to get this all the time, right? Keown's got a monkey's head and whatever.
Yeah.
It has to do with maybe the way he looks physically.
Mm.
Do we treat this as racism? These are questions above my pay grade. Mm. Is this a fair point? Is it fair to abuse somebody on this basis? Is it fair to abuse somebody because, you know, they're really tall like Peter Crouch, or really small like Alan Wright, or whoever you want to? This gets into a sticky situation. I think if we are going to go down that route, and look, I'm maybe Marcos Acuña has some native South American heritage, and maybe this is why it falls under that rubric. If we are going to go down that route, we're going to have to be very consistent with this going forward.
It's very sensitive, isn't it, when you're chatting this subject?
You know, it is. I think these are conversations that people need to have. Whatever I think is just critical is that once we decide what the parameters are, because look, I mean, this is the other thing that, I mean, you played in Liverpool, right? The songs that people sing about Scousers, I'm not talking about the Hillsborough ones. I'm talking about, in your Liverpool slums and stuff like that. Mocking Merseyside for poverty and stuff like that, that's discriminatory language. I mean, certainly in Italy, when people sing those songs about people from Naples, you know, they are treated the same way and stands get shut and whatever.
Yeah.
Here it's generally tolerated. Whatever rules you make, I think have to be, whichever way you decide to go,
I think it's hard to sanction it though, isn't it? It's hard to sanction it. What do you do?
Well, you sanction it the same way you sanction racist language, right? You identify the people, you shut the stand, you stop the game. We have a protocol for this, right?
Shut the stand for one idiot, five idiots, and 5,000.
Well, that's another debate.
That's what I'm saying is difficult to try and sanction.
Ideally, you take individual action against people, right?
Yeah.
In this case, what the referee did, he applied the same protocol that you have for racism.
Good.
Which is, you know, these monkey chants were going towards Acuña, and he said, all right, we're going to put, you know, they stopped the game. Announcement over the loudspeaker. If this continues, the game will be amended.
Yeah.
And the chant stopped. So
good.
It's something that if we're going to talk about seriously, like I said, all I want is consistency going forward. Napoli are destroyed at home by Atalanta 3-0. And I think any shot at the Champions League is now well and truly buried. But what do you make of Atalanta, and how do they look heading into the Liverpool Europa League class?
I've always had a soft spot for Gasperini and the way he coaches, and Atalanta, so free-flowing. I think when you watch him coach, and I think he tests players, he puts them in different or unusual positions. Tactically, he's always been very astute. Never had the biggest budget in the world, so it's hard to try and compete for the top spots. But the job that he's done over the years, I think, has been quite remarkable. I'm not sure why he's never been on the massive club's radar. Correct me if I'm wrong, if he's had the opportunity when he was younger, I'm not sure. But
yeah, he was at Inter. And,
but,
yeah.
I mean, but the manager I watch now, I'm thinking, like, you are some coach.
Yeah, like, no, he's been tremendous. I can answer why he hasn't been. The rep on him is that he does not have a pleasant personality to deal
okay,
with. That's and obviously he came up short when he did have a shot. But yeah,
was that his biggest job, Inter?
Yeah, but I also think
when was that? A long time ago?
It was 5-6 years ago.
Oh, okay, I was going to say he could mature into a different person, but if it's only that,
The Napoli, I think, they'll just have to go back and talk about how we've made so many bad decisions one after the other and destroyed something so beautiful. But I do think they will come back, but it's not going to be the same.
It feels a long way back for Napoli, doesn't it?
It does.
Players moving on. Osimhen's probably going to move.
I know your percentage. I know you like your percentages. Liverpool have, obviously, a Premier League is more of a priority. Maybe the FA Cup too.
Don't think Atalanta can beat Liverpool over two legs. Do you?
What percentage?
I'd put it 70-30 Liverpool's favour.
So I said maybe the FA Cup. Obviously not the FA Cup because they're not in it. But
I know what you mean.
You know what you mean. But like
70-30? Liverpool's favour?
Yeah, yeah, it's just dangerous. And Klopp can't allow them to look past it because they've got so many. They've got obviously midweek fixtures now, then the weekend, and it's going to be tricky. I think this could be really tricky. That's all I'm going to say. And Ademola Lookman, former Everton prodigy.
Playing well.
He'll be motivated.
Absolutely, absolutely. Women's football game. Arsenal win the Women's League Cup by beating Chelsea in extra time thanks to Stina Blackstenius. Is that correct pronunciation?
Yes.
But Gab, there are two other talking points from this game.
Yeah, one is Frida Manum, the Norwegian player for Arsenal. She collapsed on the pitch. She was reported on the ground for up to 10 minutes. She required oxygen. Club are saying she's stable. My thoughts are with her. In these situations, there's no point speculating. I just pray that the doctors can analyze everything. They know exactly what happened, that they can understand it clearly, and they can take all the necessary steps, and she can assess whatever risks, whatever needs to be done, because obviously her health comes first. The other one was this remarkable incident between Jonas Eidevall and first Aaron Cuthbert, the Chelsea captain, which led to Emma Hayes saying, fronting up the players, that's unacceptable. I'm not down for male aggression. She said this about Eidevall after the game. And she also bumped into Eidevall as they were walking off the pitch.
Bumped.
Pushed him, you might say. You saw the video.
I did.
We'll get to that just for a second. What prompted this whole thing was pre-game, and I think this is important. So pre-game, they had to decide, and this is Eidevall's version of events, but I'm assuming it's true. They had to decide whether they were only going to play with one ball or whether they're going to use what you guys in this country call the multi-ball system, where they basically have a bunch of balls. So if the ball goes out of play, you can restart play quickly. Arsenal wanted multi-ball. Chelsea said, no, we're only going to play with one ball. Because Chelsea, I guess, were behind, they're trying to hurry it up. Cuthbert wanted to take a quick throw in, and she was handed a ball that wasn't the ball that had gone out of play.
Right.
And that's when Eidevall got involved.
Did he go out of his technical area?
I don't know. But he got close to her, basically.
Okay.
He fronted her up, I think that's fair to say, right? Okay. To the point, and he did leave the technical area because he was booked for it. Emma Hayes was furious about this. She said he should have been sent off. And that's why we had the incident where they push, bump, whatever. She's not happy.
Yeah. I don't blame her for not being happy. I didn't see the context in what the manager done to Cuthbert. I didn't see how aggressive he was, so I can't comment on that. What I would say is,
it's not a manager's job going to it.
No.
A manager fronting up a player, talking to an opposing player is just
He's out of order, and Emma Hayes has got a point by when he got a yellow, he probably should have seen red. I didn't see it live, so I couldn't say.
Go to the fourth official, go to your assistant referee if you're that incensed about the multi-ball
system.
What
worries me a little bit, it smacks of double standards. Because it's not a good look for women's football, the fact that Emma Hayes bumped, pushed. But if the male coach had done that to Emma Hayes, I think he would be in a lot more trouble. So it's not a good look for fans watching on, young girls aspiring to be footballers or just young girls in general or young boys in general, seeing two coaches go at it. But I think Emma Hayes, I think, could have done a better job in handling herself at the end of the game.
Hate to go there, Don, but another one of your former clubs, Everton, lost to Bournemouth 2-1, which means they haven't actually won a league game since before Christmas. They're looking at more FFP charges coming their way after an £89 million loss. Mm. We kind of took it for granted that Sean Dyche is going to figure everything out, but, dude, you got to keep winning games.
Yeah, you have, and you've got to score some goals along the way. And don't score.
Beto says, oh, don't worry, I got this.
Who said?
Beto. He said, don't worry, I'll keep us up.
Yeah. If he was given the opportunity, if he was played alongside Calvert-Lewin, maybe. They got it back to 1-1. I mean, this is a sad state of affairs before the game. As a former Everton player, I'm actually thinking how good Bournemouth can be. I'd take a point there. Because that's how Everton have been. They've been terrible the last couple of months. So the fact they got it back to 1-1 and then anyone but Seamus Coleman with the own goal. I mean, anyone but him. You lose it 2-1. They've got Newcastle
You're saying,
away.
For those who don't know, for those who are too young, Seamus Legendary Coleman, player. Has been played. He's what? Like
legendary player.
15 years right back at the club.
Unbelievable service. He scores a chest own goal into the back of his net. They've got Newcastle next away, St James's Park. I think Newcastle beat them. The game after that is monumental. They play Burnley at Goodison. So they need to win that one. They need to try and take something from Newcastle. If they can't, they have to beat Burnley. Have to.
Do you think, I mean, I don't think, there's no suggestion Sean Dyche should go because of the charges, because what's been through, because Everton have no money.
They probably
right
can't
now.
Afford to.
But do you think a different manager would be
from
under
now?
Pressure?
From now or?
Well, if it wasn't Sean Dyche, if it was somebody else, if it was Chris Wilder managing
no,
Everton,
I think
when you haven't won a game in 3 months.
Yeah, I think the fans back Sean Dyche because of what he stands for. He stands for hard work. He's a man of the people. He gets it. He's not going to turn around and go, we're going to play really expansive, sexy football. He's a man from a certain background. He wants his teams to reflect that. And Everton not trying to be that team. But they're just so poor.
Yeah, I agree with you. Sean Dyche is not my favorite manager. But I think when you go into the season playing a certain way, you can't change it now in March.
Yeah,
I think he's shown you he can get results. If he's got the backing of the fans and the players, you know, I think you have to kind of live or die with it.
I wouldn't change it now.
No.
I think you're too far in.
You.
I think you're too far in. Speaking of charges, Sandro Tonali, who has already been suspended for betting violations, has been dealt and hit with another misconduct charge by the FA relating to 50 bets he placed since joining Newcastle. Thoughts, Gab?
So my first thought is on October 12th, when he was with the Italian national team, that's when he was notified that he was under investigation. And that's when he came clean, said he was a gambling addict, blah, 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 and cooperated. And then he was banned. All these 50 bets, one of the key things to establish would be, were they placed after October 12th or were they placed before?
Yeah.
And they were all placed before October 12th. So I view this as like, dude, you have a problem. I don't know if these 50 bets that he placed on Premier League games, by the way, were already part of the investigation in Italy or not. I think that has to be determined.
Yeah.
But to me, he's already been banned. He's already banned.
Yeah.
And the minute he got caught, he stopped.
Yeah.
So then you want to ban him for betting in a different jurisdiction as well.
Shouldn't they just hit him with a ban at the same time?
I think the ban should be concurrent. This seems to me like the realistic thing, and make sure that he gets the therapy and that he can overcome this obviously gambling addiction. You still need to investigate because, you know, let's face it, those 50 bets, those may involve games that he played in, games where he had knowledge. You want to establish definitively that he didn't tamper or alter results in any way.
Yeah.
But once you've done that, it doesn't make any sense for me to go and punish him again.
No. Yeah.
Calvin Phillips was pictured giving his own fans the finger in a car park. Oh, you think that's funny?
It's funny. We've all been there.
Well, that's why I asked you. Have you ever responded in a similar way to supporters who are haranguing you after a game?
Of course I have. When you come off a coach, when you're getting on the coach, you're coming out of the dressing room, you're getting on the coach, you're getting off the coach, whichever way it is, and fans who have travelled all that way, have paid their money to support the team, and you have let them down, give a penalty away, it's not the end of the world. And some fans decided to hammer you after the game as you're getting on the coach. We've all done it, Gab. We've all stuck the fingers up. We've all given them a little bit of verbal back. Doesn't mean that he's out of order. Just means that he's human. Just means that he's feeling the pressure. He's got to try and vent somehow.
So you've done this. Can you
absolutely.
You must have some good anecdotes here.
No, I haven't really. I told you about my time at Millwall, gone from West Ham to Millwall, a move I should never ever made. And, you know, I had guys standing by my car after a single game.
I'm sorry. I get to your footballers, right? But crikey, West Ham to Millwall.
No,
why
I know.
Why didn't you go from like...
Because I was 35, Gab. Right?
It's rival to rival.
I was 35 going through
go
a divorce.
Go play for Leyton Orient then.
I was going through a divorce at the time and my options were MLS or Australia. And I didn't want to leave my six-year-old lad behind.
There's no other club.
No other clubs.
There's no other club.
No other clubs. Millwall.
Leyton Orient would have had you. Dagenham and Redbridge. Gray's
weren't,
Athletic.
Weren't there.
I'm trying to think. What other clubs near you?
Millions.
Right?
Millions. But it was Millwall. I just wanted to be at the closest club. And I just lost my mind. Just I went to Millwall and I got that what Calvin Phillips got every single game at home, but they were standing by my car, the Millwall fans. So five big dudes standing by my car telling me in nicest possible way to please go back to West Ham. We don't want you here. And I can't really give them the V's because they probably would have chinned me. So I've got to take it literally on the chin, get in my car, speed away, and wait for the next game 14 days later. I get exactly the same abuse.
So you took the abuse.
Took the abuse.
Because you respect the fact that they were paying your wages? Or because were you were scared?
Or they were a little bit bigger than me. <There you go. laughs> But we've all done that. I don't blame him. It is what it is. Reports in Mexico say that Luis Felipe Scolari will replace Lozano, his Mexican boss. Gabby's a World Cup winner. Is this a good move? Is this a good idea?
Okay, so Jules and I do this thing where we take rumors that get re-reported and picked up and that we think are stupid or terrible ideas, and we like to include them. This is the version for this one. Yes, it's a terrible idea. He's just been released by Atletico Mineiro. He turned 76 years old in November. He won a World Cup in 2002. That was 22 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I think at 76, it should be about grandchildren or whatever. Or if you want to keep working, fine. But in a certain
Go upstairs.
Not go to Mexico, heading into the Copa America, heading into, you know, a World Cup that
pressure
will be placed in Mexico. No, I leave this before you get into his style of play, his attitude, whatever, which I think is just wrong for Mexico at this stage. So, No, I think this would be a terrible idea. I'm pretty sure it's not going to happen. If it does, I will say again when it happens that this is a really bad idea. Cristiano Ronaldo bagged a hat-trick as Al Nassr beat Al Tai 5-1. Don, they're 12 points behind El Hilal with 9 games to go. So I guess they won't win the title. But in all competitions, Cristiano has 33 goals in 32 games at age 39. Can we just recognize that?
I worked on the game. I've done the game on Saturday at 7 o'clock.
And were you impressed with his hat-trick?
I was impressed with his hat-trick, but I've got to say the standard of the game weren't particularly good. Sadio Mane played. He's been dragged down to a level where I'm just watching a completely different player. Ronaldo found it very easy, played as a sort of false nine-ish. I wouldn't say walked around the pitch in an arrogant way, but he just has got loads of confidence. They obviously adore him there, and he'll never score 3 easier goals in his life. Well, it was far too easy for
what
him.
What I wonder about this, too, obviously Al Hilal's been fantastic, but
when he plays
against something like Al Tai, is there any Al Tai player? And can you name one Al Tai player that our audience would be familiar with?
Not really.
Okay. Just checking. No, because I want to disabuse this notion that, oh, Saudi, everybody's got money, everybody's chucking money. No, the reality is 4 of these clubs are basically all-star teams, and the other clubs don't spend any money on anything.
They had one or two players, but it was just far too easy. Al Nassr found it very, very easy. I must say the standard of officiating was poor as well. City removed a banner put up in there by their own fans in the Arsenal game, Gab. What upset the Etihad security so much?
This is a banner put up by City fans, and I'm quoting here. It says, record profits, but record prices. Stop exploiting our loyalty. So, first of all, I have a problem. I understand why they do it. It's their stadium. They can do what they want.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's right. I have a problem with clubs removing banners, except for those situations where it's something offensive or libelous or whatever.
Yeah.
Which this really, really wasn't, right? This is just something that, hey, burst the myth that every single City fan is happy with every single aspect of how the club are being run.
Mm.
What they take issue with is that they feel that Manchester, it's a complicated thing, you can read about this online, but longtime City supporter groups, some of them feel that they're unhappy with the fact that ticket prices, yeah, season ticket prices keep rising. They don't release new season tickets. And so one of the theories is that you're doing this because you actually want fewer season ticket holders.
Right.
But you want to be able to sell one-time packages to the City fans who maybe are all over the world or come in,
yeah,
and you sell them some gold package at £250 or whatever.
Yeah.
City do have very low ticket prices. I think they have by far the lowest ticket prices among the big six.
Mm.
So that's the flip side of it. They obviously did it because they wanted to make sure that their longtime fans were taken care of.
Yeah.
And they did announce record profits last year, in part because of their tremendous European run of the prize money they won. I don't know where you strike the balance on this.
Mm.
I think it is absolutely critical that
you have to show loyalty to the fans that have been supporting the club for a long time.
People will still be there when Pep is gone, when Haaland is gone, when Mansour is gone.
Who were putting money into the club a long time ago down in League One and Two.
Yeah. And I think it's a difficult path to walk. I don't know how you do that from the club's perspective.
Yeah.
But you have to prioritize these people. You don't want to burst your bubble locally by saying, oh, look at all our Etisalat fanatics, whatever, right? Because, you know, that's the reality of it. But, you know, but they look at clubs like Arsenal and United and Liverpool, and their match day income's a lot higher because they have more fans willing to spend more money.
Mm.
And they're saying, we have all these, you know, long time, we have all these season tickets tied up, and we're charging people £400 or £500 a year when we could be charging them two or three times.
Atmosphere-wise, apart from the money, it makes more sense to reward the loyal fans by having them back every single week.
Well, that was one of the things, right, that they cited. When they played, there's an article in The Athletic that talks about this. When they played in the Community Shield, a lot of fans, a lot of season ticket holders boycotted the game.
Right.
So City still sold out their allocation. They had about 33,000.
Mm.
And they estimate that about 3,000 sort of season ticket holders went. The other 30,000 were, you know, people corporate, who are not season ticket, you know,
yeah,
corporates or maybe more like tourists flying in saying, oh, I was able to get a ticket. And that probably made City more money.
Yeah.
So that is the difficult balance there. Don, this takes us to an end, but thank you so much for chipping in. We're going to be back on Thursday. Jules is going to be back. Big midweek of Premier League action and also cup action around Europe. Until then, love the game, love your neighbor, love yourself.